time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this.
The American people, I think, is good people. They have not to charge with the guilty of all the lies.
Welcome back to the Cold War. Actually is the Cold War.
It is.
I know when we did the Renaissance last week, I said it was the Cold War, but it was actually the Renaissance, and you agreed with me that it was the Cold War, but this time...
Quality control.
It actually is. Actually is the Cold War. I'm actually impressed you picked that up in editing, because...
Yeah, no.
You must have been paying attention at some level.
Well, I didn't have the beer quite up to the lips yet, so I'm glad I caught that. Fuckle-doodle-doo, everybody. How are you?
It's been 2 weeks since we've done a show,
yes,
buddy. You had your birthday, time. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Tell us about your 54th birthday.
Not a lot. No one made a big deal. Everybody's busy with work and school. I think I got a thermos. Little disappointed. not a lot going on.
Was it in the shape of a... dildo or something?
Yeah, I'm still trying to unscrew the top. Heather said keep trying. This may be one of the last times that we have to talk to each other, dramatic pause, on slow internet. They are getting very, very close to hooking mine up. We'll be able to do nude videos, whatever. High speed all the way, baby.
Wow.
Woo!
Wow.
Looking for...
So, that's super exciting.
It's only been 19 years. I don't think that's too long to wait.
Yeah.
So... we'll see.
No.
We'll see.
I think that's the sign of a non-failed state. By the way, if at any point during the course of the recording this morning you want to say, just shut up, man, I'll understand.
This clown.
I was watching the debate, and when Biden said, just shut up, man, I thought, I wonder how often Ray thinks that in his head. I wonder if this is going to embolden. I was like, shut up, Biden. You're going to embolden people like Ray to talk over the top. What a fucking shit show, man. I know everyone, that's officially the name for it.
Yeah.
Like even the media, even Dana What's-Her-Face on CNN called it a shit show.
Yes.
On TV.
Jesus.
Oh, my God.
These
it was
are
entertaining,
two choices.
Though, I tell you.
Yeah, well, I guess if you don't have a plan and you can't really out-debate the person, just ride roughshod and keep fucking talking. My girls have been talking ever since they developed the ability to talk, haven't shut up since. So it works for them. I think it worked for Trump the other night.
Yeah.
Just kept going.
So back to your birthday.
Yes.
So you got a dildo and nothing else.
Right. No, that was...
Yeah, threesome, blowjob, anything?
There was a...
Permission to stray?
There was a threesome. There was oral gratification. Sadly, I was alone for both. But, you know, I get it. Everybody's busy. So it's just not as important as it used to be to these people. I don't matter to them. It's quite obvious now. I got you, though.
Well,
I got you, babe.
Well, you briefly, for the next week you have.
Right. And then?
Well, it's my birthday. It's my 50th.
Congratulations.
A week from today. No, week from tomorrow.
Do you want a dildo thermos?
And
sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, Chrissy has booked me in for a skydive.
Mm. Oh, dude. Rule number one, do not go to a banquet in your honor. Rule two, do not accept a skydive scheduled by a wife. But I could be wrong.
She has been a little bit pushy with the whole... I think it's time you upgraded your life insurance recently. I hadn't put those two things together, but...
That's why I'm here. Detective.
You know, just coincidentally, this year I've started to make good money.
Right.
From the QAV
right.
podcast. she ups my life insurance and books me a skydive. Yeah. Well, listen, if anything happens, right. you're my guy. You have to.
Oh, I will. What
you know, put on an over length raincoat,
right?
An old rustled raincoat.
Check.
And get a cigar.
Check.
And just come over here and go. One more question, ma'am, if you don't mind my asking.
I couldn't help but notice.
Just one thing.
Yeah,
I just missed. Just was one thing. Yeah. You were seen cutting the cords on the what do they call it? Parachute, yeah. Not an umbrella. If he's jumping out of a plane with an umbrella, that's probably his own damn fault. But it was the parachute.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Is that real alligator suitcases I'm looking at? Are you going on a trip, man? Oh, world tour. Oh, well, I'm glad I caught you before you left.
And then she says, "You're not Columbo." And then you rip off the wig and you completely bald, and you have a you have a lollipop, and you go, "Who loves your baby?" And you go, "Hey, you just transform into Kojak."
Several layers.
So that's happening.
Congratulations. I hope it's everything. Well, I hope you survive. But after that, then I hope it's everything you want it to be.
Well, my my old friend Ian Kath, who's been a listener of my podcast since the very beginning, he is a former skydiving instructor.
Uh-huh.
I think he did that for 10 years. He's done like 10,000 jumps.
Damn.
I called him and I said, tell me what I need to know. And he goes, look, the riskiest thing about skydiving is the drive to the airport.
Wow.
You got a bigger chance of getting hurt in a car than you do jumping out of a plane.
And I guess there's...
You see, there's like five levels of redundancy built into it. Like, you see, like six or seven people need to make six or seven mistakes for anything to go wrong.
So you'll be here next week. Okay. And there's less COVID up there.
Well,
so good on ya.
No COVID.
No COVID. COVID-free zone.
No COVID.
All right. All right.
We're CFZ, man.
Are you? CFZ?
Yep.
I did not know that.
CFC.
We are currently... not, but we're not working on it, so it's going to be fine. it's going to herd immunity. I mean, yeah, you'll lose 20 to 25% of your entire population, but when that herd immunity kicks in, fucking awesome. I hope I make it.
But they're the losers anyway want to get rid of.
I mean,
they're the weak.
That goes without, you know,
Yeah.
We'll see.
Speaking of culling the week, this is Cold War episode 173. As we mentioned, like we haven't done a Cold War show for a long time because we had those two interviews that I did with the kids and the former pilot, the students, not kids, the students from Slovenia and the former Tito Air Force pilot who lives in Canberra. Thank you to those guys for all coming on and chatting with me. I enjoyed it and learnt a lot. But before that, last time you and I did a show, we were talking about the execution of Mihailović and the imprisonment of Stepanac and how they made Tito the object of loathing around the West. Cartoonists were depicting him as Hermann Göring with a big fat body, wearing a uniform with medals all over it.
Right.
Editorial writers were calling him a puppet of Stalin, calling Yugoslavia satellite number one of the USSR.
Yeah.
Nobody, not a single observer in the West had any inkling that Tito and Yugoslavia were about to depart the Soviet bloc. And that's what we're going to be talking about over the next few episodes, how Tito and Yugoslavia gave Stalin the middle finger.
Right. And up to a certain point, even Tito was himself surprised because he thought he was following the Stalin line. He's just, you know, trying to do it where he's at. And as we're going to find out, Stalin wants to know everything that's going on. If I can mention the Hermann Göring thing really quick, that's ironic because as he was in jail and he got weaned off those painkillers that he was on, he actually lost a lot of weight before he died. So he looked rather dashing in his uniform before he was killed. So good for him. So I just think it's ironic.
Talking about Tito?
No, Gehring. He's the one who actually loses weight in jail. If you ever need to lose weight, boys and girls, jail's got an great exercise program. You stay awake at nights, protecting your backside. You're too nervous to eat. Probably drop a lot of weight in prison. That's what I've heard.
I've actually got a cartoon in front of me of Tito dressed up as Hitler.
Oh, the whole fascist attack, accusation.
Yeah, but this was later on. This came from the Soviets, but he's got like bear hands and an axe, and he's dressed up as Hitler, and he's standing on Russia, and he's got blood dripping from him.
That doesn't work because, as far as I know, bears can't hold axes. So,
as far as you know, shame on them. Have you ever given a bear an axe?
I have never witnessed.
You might be surprised. That's all they're waiting for.
I've never been attacked by a bear holding an axe. I'm going to just have to limit it to that lack of experience. Anyway, please continue.
Now, the rise of Titoism as a separate form of communism from the one that was being practiced in the USSR at the time was a blow to the Soviet Union and to the people around the world who believed that the Soviet form of communism was a historical movement that was going to reshape the human race. We have to remember that back in the late 40s, supporters of Stalin and the Soviet Union really thought that the Soviet Union had it right, Stalin had it right.
Right.
And these guys were, you know, this form of communism was going to slowly take over the world. And when I say take over the world, not like in an evil empire sense, but it was the liberation of the world from feudalism and capitalism and fascism. Because of communism, and now you've got Tito and Yugoslavia going, we don't think that's how you do it.
Yeah.
We think there's a different way to do communism, a better way of doing communism.
Right.
And that must have been incredibly disturbing and shocking to people in the Soviet Union and around the world. Richard West calls conversations with Stalin, the book by Milovan Žilas, one of the most important books of the century, because Žilas played a key role in Tito's break with Stalin, as we'll see, and therefore in the creation of what became known as Titoism.
Right.
He then went on to break with Tito, becoming the first opponent of communism from inside the ranks of, senior ranks of communism.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to talk a lot about Žilas and his role in this as well. He, you know, it's a great book, Conversations with Stalin. We've used it before and talking about Stalin and talking about Tito. But when the partisans were first invited to Moscow in March of 1944, Tito sent Žilas.
Right.
He was the youngest of the triumvirate that was in control of the partisans. He sent them over there to lead the delegation, and he stopped off first at Cairo and Tehran, finally got to the Soviet Union, spent a few weeks sort of touring around, having a look at the devastation, I guess, that Soviet Union would have been at the time after the Nazis had torched the place.
Literally.
We got to Moscow, got summoned to the Kremlin.
Yeah.
Now, Žilas in this book says that to him at the time, this is a quote,
right.
Stalin was something more than a leader in battle.
Oh,
he was
yeah.
the incarnation of an idea, transfigured in communist minds into pure idea and therefore into something infallible and sinless. That's the way I know a lot of our listeners think of me.
Yes, I just have to ask real quick. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but Žilas, even though he's young, very well read young man, he's got an education or whatever. The idea of looking at Stalin and going, look, out of everybody, this guy made it work. He actually was able, you know, him and others were able to bring socialism, communism, whatever you want to call it, to a country. It's in charge of that country. I get that, but to somehow forget everything that you have ever learned about humanity and think that someone is infallible and sinless. I mean, I guess these guys were true patriots, true partisans, true communists, to think that their leader was somehow a cut above the somehow a little bit more than just being human. I find that naive, but I guess at the time Stalin was one of the great men strutting across the stage at the end of World War II. I just find it strange that they abandon reason to a degree.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I wonder how much of that is just the times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think about the way that Americans at the time thought about, I don't know, FDR, or how they thought about Truman, or later on a Kennedy.
Right.
I wonder if there was this kind of rose-colored glasses view of world leaders back then,
right,
more than there is today. But as you say, it's kind of strange, particularly for educated people, to
come on,
yeah, or if it was just part of the communist mythology
that they saw, the myth of Stalin.
But it's it almost sounds like a religious thing.
Yes, right? Yes. Like
people think about a pope, but of course, communists are mostly irreligious. They're atheists. It's part of communism. But, so,
yeah,
you're right. It is quite weird. But then again, as I said, that's how people often think of me. I know. They're just infallible, sinless.
Exactly.
Yeah, the incarnation of idea. And tripod. Like me.
Right.
When Gilas met Stalin, he was massively disappointed.
No.
Whenever a listener
yeah.
says, hey, we'd love to catch up for a beer, a coffee, lunch, Cam.
Yeah.
I'm in Brisbane.
Right.
I go, sure.
Yeah.
Love to do it. We go out. We do it. I can see the look in their eyes.
The light goes out in their eye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And afterwards, they let me pay the bill. And then they cancel their subscriptions. Right. And you never hear from them again.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, Business 101, maybe you shouldn't meet so many of the listeners. Maybe that's a good business model. Meet fewer people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And none of them, not a single one, has ever sucked my dick. Like,
that's why you got into it.
Actually, that's not true. I mean, to be honest, Chrissy listened to the Napoleon show briefly before I met her. She sucked my dick at least once or twice. I know you listen to the Napoleon show.
Yes.
You sucked my dick a lot. A couple. Yeah, two special cases.
At least two. I mean, I walked up to you on my knees. But if we can move on for a second. Before we jump on to the idea Yes.
Is there... No, you were fully standing, and you still just came up to my dick, so...
Okay.
When Gias met Stalin, he wrote...
Right.
He had quite a large paunch... And his hair was sparse, though the scalp was not entirely bald.
Oh, good.
Sounds like you
so
far.
Yeah.
His face was white.
That's me.
With ruddy cheeks. Later, I learned that this coloration, so characteristic of those who sit long in offices, was known as the Kremlin complexion in high Soviet circles.
Right.
His teeth were black.
Oh, yeah.
And irregular, turned inward. Not even his mustache was thick or firm. Now, if I meet Stalin,
right,
and he doesn't have a huge Magnum PI mustache, I am going to be devastated. I guarantee you. When I meet Stalin in heaven after I die from skydiving next week, I expect him to have a glorious Soviet mustache.
Yes, because then you won't even want to look him in the face for the rest of eternity. Now I can't, dude. I can't look at you. I am so let down. Someone bring in Tom Selleck. Yeah, no, because in every rendering that you see of him, massive. I mean, you could set up a can of beer up on that mustache all on its own, and for him to walk into a room and go, aha. But I have read so many accounts that the aging that Stalin went through from June 22nd, 1941 at 5 a.m. in the morning when the war started, he survived, don't get me wrong, but it took years off his life and there wasn't much left by the time the war was over. And this guy is just saying, yeah, he was a husk of a man.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think that was a tough few years. And he's not a young man either. And he's had a hard life. Like, even before the Operation Barbarossa. I mean, he'd been out in Siberia
prison.
As a young man.
Hell yeah.
A lot of health issues. Health issues as a kid.
Right.
What did he have? He had an arm that didn't work properly or
and
something.
A leg.
You know, he's revolutionary from a young man. Yeah. Tough. Like, he's had a tough life.
Yeah. That's color to him.
I guess the point is don't meet your heroes.
Right.
Don't meet your
heroes.
Exactly. Is the point here.
Exactly.
Whether it's Stalin or me, just don't do it.
Or at the very least, Cam's penis. But before we go on...
Unless you're going to suck my dick.
Unless you're, and then please get there as soon as you can.
Don't look at the rest of me, just the dick.
Anyway, oh my God, so many thoughts are coming. Anyway.
But, you know how... Yeah, in movies when a guy meets a hot girl and he's looking at her tits and she goes, up here, up here.
You're going to go down there.
In my case, when you meet me, right? I'm going down there, down there. Don't look
don't
up here.
No.
Down there.
No, it's all, trust me, I'm doing you a favor. Please stare at my penis. All right?
Well, no.
No, but you said something at the very beginning of the show that I wanted to comment on when you were talking about... the idea of communism taking over, not in a violent way, but that people, like you said, as salvation, people will find that it's a better form of government, whatever. But the point is, the Soviet Union and all these satellite states have to survive long enough for this to take place. And you've already got the West lining up around the United States. And now these various countries have to come together. And it's going to be trying to string federations together or trying to get a bunch of allies and understand who's going to protect who and who's got the resources, that's actually going to add to some of this division. So Tito's got a plan for his country. Stalin's got a plan for every one of those countries. And yet those two are not going to line up very well. And it's fascinating to watch Tito remain strong in the presence of Stalin and go, nope, I know what I want to do for my country and I'm heading that way. And fuck me if he doesn't accomplish a lot more than what a lot of other leaders who tried to stand up to Stalin was able to do.
Indeed. But when he gets back to Yugoslavia, Žilas in Borba, the official newspaper of the Yugoslav Communist Party, doesn't mention his disappointment with Stalin.
Good call.
Doesn't mention the mustache, doesn't mention the black teeth.
Right. Good call.
But he said that Stalin had caring yellowish-brown eyes and an expression, though stern, of beautiful, simple serenity.
Psychopath. Hello.
Who?
Stalin. Look, kill you. I could kill you. You could live. I really don't care. If you want to say that serenity now.
Okay. Yeah, that's serenity now.
I don't care if you
kill
live
you,
in,
not kill you. Yeah, I'm okay either way.
It's a Monday for me.
Now, at this and his following meeting, Stalin said that the partisans should try to conceal the fact that they planned a communist revolution. He said, "What do you want with red stars on your caps?"
Yeah, showy.
And Zias tried to say, "Well, look, they're already a popular symbol." He's like, "You're just trying to show off." He said that he didn't want them to scare the British off by displays of communism, because this is 44. They still need to win the war. They still need to defeat the Nazis. Need the British on side. He's like, ixnay on the communism, Just
tone it down.
Keep it under wraps.
Yeah. A little less red.
That's right.
A little less red. That's all I'm asking. Yeah. We don't scare these people.
A little less communism, a little more action, please. All this communism ain't satisfaction in me. R.I.P. Mac Davis, the writer of that song, died yesterday.
Yes. Loved me.
I'd never heard the name, I'm embarrassed to say.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote A Little Less Conversation, In the Ghetto, and Don't Cry Daddy for Elvis.
Wow.
Three of Elvis's greatest late career hits, written by Mac Davis. Yes. He also wrote for himself, "Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can." My grandfather used to sing that song. I told Chrissy this and she goes, "Yeah, everybody's grandfather used to sing that song." Great song. And I think Stalin liked that song. I think Tito liked that song. They were big fans of Mac Davis. But apparently he had a TV show in the US. He was a country Hall of Famer, country music Hall of Famer. I'd never heard the name. Did you know the name Mac Davis before he died yesterday? Before I mentioned him 10 seconds ago?
Yes, mid-70s, I saw him in a movie. I didn't know who he was. I knew he was a singer because my mom was a big fan. She was into the denim shirt, unbuttoned, hairy chest thing. Anyway, he's in a store. He's in a grocery store in a movie, and he just goes around to the store in the various aisles. He gets some bread. He goes to the meat section. He throws some, grabs a piece of meat, throws it on the bread, goes to get some mayo, and he just eats the sandwich as he's going through the store. And I turn to my mom and I'm like, I didn't know you could do that because I was so hungry every time we went in the store. I had to wait till we got home. She goes, no, you can't. But he did it. It's obviously a Mac Davis thing that the rest of us can't do. But I was a little kid. I thought that is the coolest thing I will ever see. Just fucking make a sandwich, eat it right there in the store. He's my hero.
Yeah. Well, R.I.P. Mac Davis. Thank you for the music. What a badass, as you say. Now, Stalin said, yeah, don't frighten off the British. He said, perhaps you think...
Vodka. Perhaps you think just because we are allies of the English, we have forgotten who they are and who Churchill is. There's nothing they like better than to trick their allies. And Churchill is the kind of man who will pick your pocket of a kopeck if you don't watch him. Yes, pick your pocket of a kopeck. Roosevelt's not like that. He digs in his hand only for bigger coins and likes to do the reach around, likes to cup the balls, little tug on the dick, gives you that look in the eye, kiss on the cheek. You know, he's in a wheelchair.
Right.
He doesn't have much pleasure. But Churchill will do it for a kopeck.
So the famous Churchill will pick your pocket for a kopeck.
Right.
Kopeck for people who don't remember is like, I don't know, a cent or something in Russia at the time.
Yes.
That's where it comes from, what he said to Zias when he went there in 44.
And picking up with Zias, after he leaves the meeting with Stalin, he leaves Moscow, like you said, I mean, he's even more convinced of Stalin's greatness. This guy is one in a million. It's a good thing we've got him on our side. And he writes nice things about Stalin. Like you said, Stalin loves that. But then there's going to come the time that I think we've already mentioned when the Yugoslavs, when the partisans had been attacking the Russians for raping their women, which Stalin did not really think that was a big problem at all. So there are going to be moments when Stalin is miffed with him. So it's not just a complete love relationship. But and we don't have to really go into this, but there was one part when Zilash's wife goes to Moscow, and Stalin, I think he just can't let things go, or he finds different ways to torment you. He says kind of mean things about Zilash to his wife, and at one point he kisses Zilash's wife on the cheek or whatever, and then he goes, oh, I hope I'm not going to be accused of rape. Oh. I mean, this guy can just keep sticking it in your side, and that's kind of who he is, and that's who Tito and Zilash have to deal with. They have to deal with Stalin when he's at his best and when he's at his worst.
Yeah, he's a bit like Trump in a debate.
I'm grabbing the pussy.
I'm ranting,
whatever. Whatever. I can do it all. I can do it all.
Ranty drunk uncle at Thanksgiving dinner. He said to Zilash's wife, and such an army was insulted by no one else but Zias, of whom I could have at least expected such a thing, a man who I received so well, and an army which did not spare its blood for you.
Oh.
Does Zias, who himself is a writer, not know what human suffering and the human heart are? Can't he understand that if a soldier who has crossed thousands of kilometers through blood and fire and death has fun with a woman or takes some trifle?
Jesus. That's what you want. You want someone explaining in a delicate manner the concept of rape to your wife.
He's mansplaining. And then then as you said, he gave her a kiss, said he hoped he wouldn't be accused of rape. And then he said, listen, if you want to know the difference between this and the rape,
I'm here
next
for
time
you.
I'll invite Beria to dinner.
And then you
see see how it goes. Yeah, you get you some flowers. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice flowers.
Oh, my God.
Now, when Gias returned to Moscow with Tito in March of 1945, he got needled a lot by Stalin. He accused him of being a German because he preferred to drink beer rather than vodka. Then he forced Gias to toast the Red Army. And he was just sticking it into Gias at every given opportunity. And at this point, Gias and Tito are starting to get a little bit tired. Gias is like, why don't you just shut up, man?
Everyone's like, just shut up, you clown. Yeah. But
yeah, you clown.
Don't you find it quite clever? Stalin could have just went after Tito, but then it's one head of state versus another head of state, and that's ugly. But let me bitch slap your man, Tito, in front of you, and you can't do fuck all about it because you're not exactly sure where you stand with me. I mean, it's brilliant of Stalin to try to slap these two down without directly going at Tito, because again, they're getting just a little too independent for him, and that's not going to stop anytime soon.
Well, he didn't like communists that he's supporting criticizing the army that's supporting them.
No, he's not wrong.
That just rubbed him the wrong way.
We have to liberate your ass, literally. And we liberated all those countries around you, and now you're giving a shit? I don't think so.
Well, in early 1945, the Russians sent a film crew into Belgrade to make a film about the partisans called In the Mountains of Yugoslavia. I think Mac Davis wrote the theme song for that. In the mountains of Yugoslavia.
I saw it all. Are
killing the Nazis. the actor playing Tito was given the major role, of course.
Right.
But the script included a Russian acting as a guardian angel to the partisans.
Oh, shit.
After seeing the film, Tito was enormously pissed off.
Yes.
And, thought, well, this is the way that they see me. I'm just a puppet who's being told what to do by the Soviets.
Yeah.
And then later they found out that the film crew were actually setting up a secret Russian spy network across Yugoslavia.
Shit.
They would hold, every day after they wrapped filming, they would throw orgies.
As you do.
Would leave the cameras running, record the orgy.
Oh, my God.
And then use it as a honeypot to blackmail the participants, including one of Tito's bodyguards.
Damn.
Who was there to help manage the dog that was playing the role of Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Tiger? I think was the name of Tito's dog.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't the real Tiger.
No, it was the second
this
one.
This is the dog that nearly... It's the one that nearly attacked Churchill.
Right. Good dog.
They had to get the bodyguard there. Then the bodyguard got involved in the orgy. They got the video of the orgy. And used it to blackmail him. So one of Tito's bodyguards had been blackmailed by the Russians. And we've told the story before about how a Russian tried to get a young partisan woman, a cryptographer, to be a spy. She blew the whistle to the Central Committee. Tito was furious. I mean, that's very uncool when you're being spied on by your own allies.
Yeah, I mean... We are completely loyal to you. As far as we know, we're towing the line, and this is the way you think it. So the point is, in early 1945, Tito's Central Committee starts to hear about these spy networks being set up. And again, it just blows them away. We trust you. We are allies. We fought and we bled together, and now you're spying on us. I can see you spying on Britain, but why in the fuck? I guess you don't trust us. So there's already little cracks forming between Stalin and Tito.
Well, I think these are big cracks at this stage.
Bigger ones are coming.
And the Soviets also learned to... They learned to play off the Serbs and the Croats against each other to get sort of inside info. And, of course, then the tensions increased even more in 1945 when Tito was forced to withdraw his troops from Austria and Trieste. So he said afterwards that today's Yugoslavia is no object for bartering and bargaining.
Oh.
Now, this is because he knew that Stalin gave up Trieste for getting more of Germany in his negotiations with the US and the UK. So it's Tito lost territory so Stalin could get more territory. And, you know, he's pissed about this.
Yeah, it's a one-way street.
When Stalin heard about Tito's speech, which he knew was directed at him, he was annoyed. He told the Yugoslavs if there were any further criticisms of Russia or him, they would publicly disavow Tito.
Oh, my God.
Kick him out of the common form, the International Movement of Communists.
Right.
So that is where it escalated to. And then there was the issue of Albania.
So another issue that's coming up at this point is the Treaty of Friendship between Yugoslavia and Albania. And what they're having these agreements. And what they want to do to stimulate their economies as fast as they can and as well as they can is they're going to merge their economies. Obviously, Yugoslavia is the larger of the two countries. And so this is going to, let's be honest, this is going to benefit Yugoslavia a lot more than it's going to benefit Albania. It's kind of like how Soviet Russia is treating Yugoslavia, because every time there's a deal, it doesn't seem to quite work out for Tito and his people. It seems to benefit Russia a lot more. And that's kind of what they're doing to Albania. But still, the idea is that they're coming together. They're going to form something. Some of the Albanians feel like they're going to lose some of their freedom. Are they going to lose the ability to make economic decisions? And there's going to be paranoid Stalin going, whoa, whoa, whoa. If you're making this agreement on the surface, what don't I know as far as kind of any secret protocols beneath this? So this should be a simple economic policy, but because of the times and the people that we're dealing with, it sets off a lot of hackles and everybody's starting to mistrust everybody else.
So Albania, for people who are geographically ignorant, sits to the west of the heel of Italy's boot.
Mm.
Back then, it was in between Yugoslavia in the north and Greece in the south. And there's a civil war going on in Greece at the time, as we know. The Greek communists are trying to fight for control of Greece. The British are in there supporting the Greek royalists against the communists. Tito and the Albanians had been working on this deal with Yugoslavia to support them in case the Greek war wandered over their border into Albania.
Right.
Oh, as well as the economic cooperation.
Right. And the Greek communist insurgency started up again in May of 1946. So you're right. So Albania is worried they don't have the wherewithal to defend themselves in case the fighting starts coming their way. Tito's like, hey, I've got a bunch of experienced battle-hardened guys. I can take care of you. So again, this sounds like one communist country trying to protect another, but it's not going to sound that way to some people in Moscow.
Or even in Albania. The Albanian communists who was against the deal committed suicide in protest.
Damn.
Now, Stalin then summoned Zias to Moscow for a chat. When he arrived, he gave him a hard time. Now, Zias later said that he thinks this was an attempt to create a divide between Zias and Tito.
Yeah.
That Stalin was trying to separate them. Now, Kardelj was also summoned, as was Tito. Kardelj went, Tito pulled a Savonarola, said, oh, listen, I would love to come. But not feeling well.
Things are flaring up.
And I'm quite convinced, quite convinced that if I go there, I'll feel even worse. So, won't feel anything at all ever again. He remembers what happened to the former leader of the Yugoslav Communist Party when he went to Moscow. He didn't come back.
Yeah.
So he didn't go. Zias got there. Stalin said, so members of the Central Committee in Albania are killing themselves over you. This is very inconvenient. Very inconvenient.
Damn. Yeah.
When Zias tried to explain the situation, Stalin cut him off and said, look, we're happy for you to swallow Albania. And then, and I love this, stuck all of the fingers of his right hand into his mouth. And went, swallow it, take it all. And then, when that wasn't enough, he pulled out his laptop and queued up Two Girls, One Cup. He said, look, watch this. You understand what I mean about swallowing? Then he pulled out goatsy just for the hell of it.
Because
she just was like, wait, what's that got to do with swallowing? He goes, well, it's nothing, but I just like it. It always makes me laugh.
That's how I like to end meetings. Goatsy.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. I mean, Gilash is like, whoa, you've got us all wrong. We're trying to help him out. Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have a picture of Goatsy either. Stalin had guys that were trained, highly trained, to come into the room.
Grab your buttocks just right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And get that prolapse. Yeah, well, the training is mostly to get the prolapsed anus.
Because
no Goatsy without a prolapsed anus, it's got to be out there. Then you pull it out.
And
you know, it's all part of the Goatsy experience.
Yeah, yeah. So,
speaking of which,
yes,
on your birthday,
yes.
I sent you some semi-naked photos of Chrissy putting suntan oil on at the beach.
I appreciate that.
And I accidentally told Chrissy, and telling Hunter.
Yeah, no.
And then Chrissy was there, and she heard. And she demanded that I see it, and she was furious.
Right.
And said, what am I going to say if Heather sees those? How am I going to explain that? I go, well, you say Cameron did it. That's how you explain
it. That's how I explain everything.
You know, you say, it's Cameron's fault. That's what you do. What's she going to do?
Yeah.
Tell Ray he can't work with me anymore?
And as far as what I did with those photos, you know, what's done is done. Let's move on. Let's move forward. What's next? So don't tell her not to worry about it. And yet, thank you.
What's done is all over the curtains.
I moved on.
I said, happy birthday. Here, have some photos of my wife.
And I said, happy birthday to myself. So thank you.
I said to Chrissy, look, he's an old man. He's not getting any.
No.
We just got to do something nice.
It is my birthday. Yeah. So
it's his birthday. Make him happy.
Tell her if it makes her feel any better. I'm really looking forward to my next birthday. Hopefully I'll get some more photos. So I'm actually looking forward to my next birthday now.
Just told Stalin, no, it's not like that. We're not swallowing it up. We're just offering support. And Stalin went, do it.
Take it.
Come over to the dark side.
I don't care. Yeah. But Stalin wasn't going to fall for that. It's like, you're bullshit. You're swallowing it. Swallow it.
Yeah, swallow it. Take it. Then Stalin summoned an old friend of Tito's from Bulgaria to Moscow to explain why the Bulgarians were talking about forming a customs union of their own with Romania.
Right.
This guy was named Dmitriev. He was eviscerated by Stalin for colouring outside of the lines. You don't go and start forming your own economic packs without asking my permission. I am the global leader of communism. You ask my permission before you jump. I say jump, you say how high. Jump, how high? Jump, how high? I say raise your hands in the sky. High, right? What? So really, he's attacking Tito indirectly by attacking his friend for doing what Tito was doing. And then he called for a federation of Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, and Albania. This is the federation that should be created, and the sooner the better. Right away, if possible, tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow, if possible. Agree on it immediately. He really does start sounding like Trump here.
Yeah.
He's just like,
fucking do it.
Just randomly coming up with ideas and wanting it done tomorrow. Just because he thinks it sounds cool.
Yeah. Now, we're talking about February of 1948 here. And you're right. Stalin is dropping the hammer. There's been too many independent moves by these pissant little countries. No, bitches, you check with me. And if I could take your federation thing, he starts giving everybody a federation. It's like Oprah. You get a federation and you get a federation. Because now he's going, you know what? I want a federation between Poland and Czechoslovakia. I want a federation between Romania and Hungary. But Gilash is now maybe not so enamored of Stalin because he's like, you know, I think you want us to form these federations, and then you're going to attach various parts of the Soviet Russia to them, and then suddenly you are in direct control. So again, I think Stalin has had enough of these independent movements by these people, and he's trying to come up with a series of events, not only to attack Tito indirectly, but to get these satellite states under control.
Then Stalin started attacking Kardelj for sending the Yugoslav army into Albania. What the fuck? Albania.
And that's
asking
really
Stalin's
about.
Permission.
Exactly. And that's what this is
me
really
mispronouncing
about.
Albania?
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Go for it. Make it a new country.
So there's lots of yelling and posturing on both sides. It's, you know, Zhilas again was like, just shut up, man. And Kardelj called him a clown. And it was a shit show.
Yeah.
After this meeting, Zhilas said he felt empty and bitter. As soon as he and Kardelj could get out of Moscow, they said they felt a massive amount of relief, even though they didn't feel like they were threatened physically because they were leaders of a communist country. Not
still.
That would stop him, as we'll see moving forwards. But anyway, you know, they didn't feel physically threatened. It was just the abuse from Stalin.
Right.
When they got back to Yugoslavia, Tito convened a meeting of the Politburo, and they started to talk about what they're going to do about Russia. Now, one of the guys who was there, a guy called Sreten Zhuzhevich, he was one of the Politburo at the time, an economics expert.
Mm-hmm.
He was very, very pro-Soviet, Zhuzhevich, and he took extensive notes on everything that was said and who said it and passed that on to the Soviet embassy.
Damn.
Of course, it got back to Stalin,
right,
which is just going to make things even worse.
Yeah, because here's Tito saying, look, I can't get Stalin to make a decent trade agreement with me. We're hurting economically. The whole Albanian question, I mean, yeah, I sent troops without checking with him, but I thought I was doing a good thing. I thought I was following the Stalinist line by protecting or trying to help the Greek communists in their kerfuffle, their civil war. I thought I was doing right. Stalin's pissed with me. This is getting out of hand, and all this is getting back to Stalin. So holy shit.
Now, just for a minute, let's stop and think about Stalin's perspective. I mean, yes, he's being a bully and a tyrant here, even with his own allies and friends, but got to keep in mind that it's a very delicate ballet that Stalin is doing at this stage. Soviet Union has been destroyed, like literally fucking wiped out by the Nazis in the war. 20 million people dead, economically ruined, socially ruined. And he's got an alliance that he's trying to keep together with the West,
right,
British and the Americans. He's got, you know, by this stage in 1945, when he's having the big fights with these guys, you know, the war against the Nazis is over, but he's still trying to prevent the Americans and the British from attacking him. He knows the Americans have a bomb or nearly have a bomb.
Oh, yeah.
That could be a bad thing. So he doesn't want to piss them off. He's still probably angling for deals where he can get a lot of economic support from the Americans or take a lot of stuff out of the breakup of Germany that's going to rebuild the country, and he needs the support of the West for that. The last thing he needs is a communist army just wandering around Eastern Europe.
That's true.
And getting involved or threatening to get involved in the war in Greece where Britain, remember the old percentages deal?
Oh, yeah.
He gave Britain Greece in the percentages deal. So, you know, he's sticking to his word. He's not going to get involved in that.
Right.
He can't have somebody that's part of the communist international getting involved in fucking with the British, because that's going to have ripple effects. So I understand Stalin's perspective here. It's like, motherfuckers, there's a bigger deal. This isn't just about Greece. It's not just about you and your economy. I am trying to juggle a whole bunch of fucking balls right now. And you're by not checking in with me, you're right. fucking with my balls.
Right.
Now, usually, I like it when somebody fucks with my balls, but not when I'm juggling them, honestly. And I'm standing on the top of a 50-foot pole in a very windy day, and there's lava pits below me.
Right, sharks.
And sharks with frickin' lasers on their frickin' heads. And crocodiles. And you're fucking with my balls. Can you just, you know, so fair point. Just check in with me before you do this shit, because you're fucking shit up.
Yes, everything you said was true. However, when you have something like a war and you have complete breakdown of society, there are going to be people that rise up through that crap, whatever you want to call it. And yes, maybe they're psychopaths or whatever, I don't know. But they're also people who have pulled themselves up by the bootstraps. Because remember, Stalin ignored Tito for years during the war. Tito thinks of as himself as a man of destiny. He sees himself as the leader of his country. So yes, I acknowledge Stalin's achievements. I acknowledge that he helped win the war. I get all that. But Tito was not going to give up everything that he wants, everything that he thinks he should do for his country, because Stalin says so. So you have personalities. You have a clash of personalities, a battle of the wills. And Tito was not just going to sit there and take this shit. So Stalin doesn't have to recognize that, but it might help him if he did. Kind of needs to work on his people skills. Just a bit. Just a smidge.
Who? Tito or Stalin?
Stalin.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I think he's got good people skills. Like, what he's learned is if he buggers up a relationship with someone, he just has them executed or sent to a gulag. Oh, you know,
that'd be so sweet. Just know, check it off
if
your
you
list.
Don't. That's how I like it. If you don't like me, go to jail. Go directly to jail. Wow. Do not pass.
Okay.
Go. Do not collect $200.
Good to know.
Now, in this meeting of the Politburo, Tito outlined all of the disagreements they've been having with the Soviet Union, as you said, and declared that the relations between the two countries had reached an impasse. And Tito then said, if they continue such a policy towards us, I will resign. Holy now, Zias shit. Wrote in his book, probably no one there was naive enough to take this threat seriously, certainly not I. He threw it out to test us, to see if anyone would approve of his resignation as the most sensible way out. But everyone, except for Zhuzhevich, who was noticeably silent, cried out against any such idea, and Tito did not mention it again. Now, this is the second time Zhias has heard Tito offer his resignation. The first we mentioned in an earlier episode was back in December 1941 when the partisans were driven out of Serbia. Mm. Moscow was still supporting the Chetniks.
Yeah.
Tito offered to resign.
Right.
But now in February 1948, Tito feels strong enough to stand up to the Russians. But I have to give a shout out to anally retentive listener Seth Peden. Who sent me an email correcting a comment I made on the earlier episode, because when we were talking about that last time, I said this says a lot about Tito's character that he offered to resign. I said, I don't think Stalin ever offered to resign. And he sent me a list of four instances where Stalin did offer to resign, going back to the 20s, and as late as 1952. Stalin apparently offered to resign.
How sincere could he have been in 1952? Come on.
Well, no, I think I've read the account of it, and it sounds pretty sincere. He was very ill. He was very sick, and even his mustache wouldn't grow properly. And you know, we all know that, like Donald Trump's hair, Stalin's mustache was actually an alien life form that attached itself to him symbiotically.
Yes.
Yeah, power source, and it actually controlled him. It had a little tube that went up his nose and into his brain, like one of those wasps that sticks its stinger into the brain of a cockroach and takes control of the cockroach. That was Stalin's mustache. That'd be a great movie. We should do a movie about that.
Okay.
Stalin's at seminary one day, young man, very pious,
wants
to be a priest,
pacifist,
vegan, loves Enya.
Tree hugger, gotcha.
Mate, makes his own, you know, coffee beans, and you know, he's environmentally sustainable.
Sends out positive vibes.
One day,
right, right,
yeah. One day he's out in the woods, meditating, praying to God, sure. And mm-hmm. this you see this mustachey type thing crawling along the ground, Evil Dead style, crawls along the ground, climbs up, and attaches itself to his upper lip, so, takes control of him, right. Turns him into the Stalin we all know and love. And here's the thing, the name of the alien race is actually Stalin. That's the name of the alien race. That's when he changed his name to Stalin.
Right.
Because that's, you know, and back at home on planet Stalin, Stalinia, they're all watching this. They're all rapt. We see see it from the point of view
in real time
of people at home in Stalinia.
Right.
Yeah, it's a reality show. They send out.
Oh, I want this.
Mustaches.
Yes.
Around the universe. And it's whoever can take over the biggest part of a planet by symbiotically attaching yourself to a host subject. That's the reality show, and you win.
Yes. Do you know?
And in fact, the winner was in that round of the of the series was our Stalin, Earth One Stalin, or are we Earth Two? Earth Two Stalin.
I've got so much to learn. I'm just honored to be here. The first person that Stalin kills was actually the first person that said, "Hey, yesterday you didn't have a mustache, and now you've got this giant mustache that you can use a badger in." I had to kill him. Had to kill him. So, you know, yeah. Anyway, and then killed him became easier.
Actually when he killed when people were executed, it was actually Stalin's mustache that would detach.
I'm not surprised.
At night, when Stalin was asleep. Right. And it would scurry away to the prisons and have execute people himself.
Yeah, and then the orgies. But we'll work on that later. That's fine.
How does a mustache kill people? Does it like
it goes in their throat?
Does it just pull the trigger off on a gun? Or chokes them? Yeah.
Yeah.
They see it and they go, "Oh, look at you, cute little mustache!" And then it enlarges and it gets bigger and bigger, and then it wraps itself around them.
They turned on.
Strangled to death.
Right, right. Sorry. I share too much sometimes.
Apart from Zhizhevich's report to Moscow, nobody else in the meeting that day mentioned anything publicly about the tensions with the Soviets. The only hint of it in the entire world, as far as I know, appeared in the French newspaper Le Figaro.
Uh-huh.
On the 12th of February, 1946, I think, in an article from Bucharest, a reporter there had noticed workmen taking down the picture of Tito. Pictures of Tito up on the wall, celebrating Tito, etc.
No, tea time. Gone.
Actually, this would have been 1948, 12th of February 1948, not 46, sorry. Mm-hmm. He was like, "Huh, they're taking down Tito's picture. I wonder what that could mean."
And Tito, when he finds about it, it absolutely devastates him because he's like, you know, everything's coming unraveled. Who are my friends anymore? Why are they taking down my photos? What have I done to them? I'm just trying to help. So again, I think he was insincere when he offered to resign, but this does hurt him. It does affect him because it's like, how is this happening? And more importantly, what is going on? What does this portend?
He invites his friend and future biographer, Vladimir Gergier, to his house for a chat. Now, Gergier wasn't in the highest echelons of the Politburo, wasn't at the crisis meeting.
Right.
So he didn't know anything about this, but he could tell, he said, as soon as he got there, that Tito, something was wrong. Look in his eye. And Tito asked him about his pictures being removed from Romania. You must have heard about this. What do you think it all means? Told him that his relationship with the Soviets was souring. And this might have been a way of sort of testing with his closest friends,
yes,
how they would react to the idea that Yugoslavia might pull away from the Soviet Union. While he was having this conversation, his inner circle, the other members of the Politburo, were testing out the idea with the leadership of the other communist republics. Listen, if we were to...
theoretically.
You know, it's not you, it's me with Stalin. How would you feel about that?
Yeah. So...
Yeah. Yeah. Mummy and Daddy are getting a divorce.
Who do you like?
Which one do you love the most?
Daddy's got a sports car. Right. Yeah. Mommy's got a gulag. No, but I mean, you can have friends, you can have loyal followers, but I don't blame Tito for doing these little tests now and then, because I can be your friend, I can be your coworker, but when you're talking about a possible break with Stalin, he needs to know who's going to be on his side. So this, for lack of a better word, process has begun.
It's putting up a test balloon or trial balloon, like when Roger Stone said a few weeks ago, I think Trump should just not resign the presidency if he loses, or shouldn't leave the White House even if he loses. I think he should just stay there.
Yeah.
Test balloon, see how people react.
Kind of doesn't matter.
So then they were having another meeting of the Politburo when news came in.
Mm-hmm.
That, first of all, this is on the 20th of March, 68. Tito told the Politburo that Moscow was recalling its military instructors from Yugoslavia.
Right.
Then during the meeting, they got news that the Soviet economic experts were also pulling out.
Sorry.
And when Stalin pulls out, he doesn't wipe his dick on the curtains. You know where he wipes it?
Where?
On the mustache. Just
because I can.
It on the mustache. Carries that around. Carries the scent. He likes the scent.
I know how you smell. Yeah. Getting hard. Anyway,
he goes up to people and goes, "Give Stalin a big kiss. Go on, give me a big kiss."
Oh, God. Do you smell your mom? Yeah, I do.
What's that?
Anyway. Sorry.
It's crusted all over my mustache.
That's hot.
It's not a mustache. It's a crustache. It's a crustache because it's crusty.
There you go.
Crustache.
That's what I call mine from now on. Yeah.
A crustache.
So.
Tito wrote a very mild letter back to Stalin, denied that the Yugoslavs had been unfriendly, that they distrusted them, or that they kept them under surveillance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mix up. It's a whoopsie. We can fix this, Stalin. Mm. Maybe.
But the Soviet reply, which was addressed to Comrade Tito and the other members of the Central Committee, was signed by Molotov and Stalin in that order, accused the Yugoslav Communist Party of a lack of democracy, something that
was
very important to Stalin.
That's right.
Democracy. And said that the Yugoslav Communist Party was an organization that could not be regarded as Marxist, Leninist, or Bolshevik.
Holy shit.
It mentioned by name four questionable Marxists in the leadership, including Zhiyar Savrankovich, and warned that the political career of Trotsky is quite instructive. Yeah.
I'd hate to see anything bad happen to you. Yeah.
The four people who... Yeah. Lock up your ice picks. The four people who were named immediately offered their resignations, and Tito said, "Oh no, I know what they want, to smash our Central Committee, first you, then me." I got to come up with a Tito voice. Somebody said, "Like, I tell you, it's like Joe Pesci." I don't know. Right. I got to come up with that. It's like I can't do Joe Pesci unless it's kind of like that. Like it's got to be kind of like. You think I'm funny? Do I amuse you? Maybe that's my Tito voice. Oh, I don't know. I know what they want.
to smash our Central Committee. First you, then me. Ah, is that what they want? You think that's funny? Do I amuse you? Do I make you laugh? No, explain it to me. I'd like to understand. Why am I funny? Why do I make you laugh?
Even the date of the letter, 27th of March 1948, was seen as an insult because it was the 7th anniversary of the coup d'etat in protest against the alliance with Hitler when the crowd in Belgrade attacked the German tourist office and tore up the swastika flag and all the SS stuff. Now, you know, it was that defiance of Hitler which led to the invasion and the breakup of Yugoslavia, 1.5 million Yugoslavs dead. And now Stalin and Molotov are sending them a letter basically saying, you're not even really communists.
But I hope Stalin remembers and whatever. I know he's got to be the big man, but the Yugoslavs in general and certainly the Serbs, they don't take kindly to threats. So we'll see what happens. But the point is that the letter campaign has already started. First, there's denials, but clearly they're pushing each other's buttons. Something's got to happen because I don't see either one of these men, for their various reasons, backing down.
And so Tito wrote a letter back to Stalin which said...
The anus is now closed. Stalin's like, I'll decide when the anus is closed.
An iron curtain has descended across the...